TED Audio Collective.
Hello, Francis.
Hi, beautiful.
So this is a show about work, but of course what happens outside of work can have a huge impact on our performance.
Or as I like to say, if it weren't for the pesky humans.
Yes. Today we're talking about mental health, which is this big, complicated, messy question on one hand, but it's also quite simple, which is that in order to have the capability and license and motivation, as we've talked about, to do a great job, your employees have to be in a mentally healthy place. And so it's in our interest as organizations to not only care about this issue, but also be proactive about setting our employees up to thrive mentally, emotionally, psychologically.
This is going to be so important. As you know, I have gotten back into physical shape recently, took a decade off. and I get a lot of positive affirmation in the world. You look great. I have also gone through periods of that mental freshening up, but that's so much more invisible. And if I have to look back, a bigger obstacle.
I feel like that experience makes you like, I'm just going to round up the numbers a little bit, everyone else. when it comes to having gone through periods of struggling mentally in some way. And so I'm really excited to get into this conversation today and just start to chip away at it.
Let's go.
I'm Ann Morris. I'm a company builder and leadership coach.
And I'm Frances Fry. I'm a professor at the Harvard Business School, and I'm Ann's wife.
And this is Fixable from the TED Audio Collective. On this show, we believe that meaningful change happens fast, anything is fixable, and good solutions are usually just a single brave conversation away.
Who do we have today, Ann?
Well, Frances, today we are hosting another master fixer on the show. It's actually one of your colleagues at Harvard Business School, Professor Lauren Cohen.
Oh, I adore Lauren Cohen. Not only is he the best in the world in his field, which is behavioral finance, how people behave, but I recall him being interviewed once and was asked, if you weren't a professor, what would you be? And his response was, a nanny.
Yeah, I find him to be this really interesting, incredible messenger. He really followed the data from his original field, behavioral finance, honestly, to the issues that are really driving performance inside firms. And mental health is a huge variable.
We're often asked in academia, well, what does it tie to performance? This one has a bullseye.
All right, let's get into it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Lauren Cohen, welcome to Fixable.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before we get started, have you broken any powerlifting records recently, just so we're up to speed on your achievements?
You've done your research. No. So not recently. Yeah, it's been a good 12 months. But gosh, I feel like one is in the works, you know, so that's been a little bit too long. So training has been going well. I definitely squatted today, and I'll ask the same of you.
First of all, you're the first person to ever ask me that, ever.
Okay.
Second, hilarious. Yeah. All right. Now, let me ask now, what yes. time of day do you work out?
It's the morning. So I wake up at 4 every morning, and I work out then. Because I also have a ton of kids. And so my wife and I get to work out together. It's like the one time that we get to just kind of breathe a few times before the little ones come rushing down.
So two things. One, I'm the youngest of six.
Very nice.
Two, my wife wakes up at 4, but that's when she does her best work. So she wakes up at 4 and writes.
Yes. Dan Ariely has this idea, which I think is right. That everyone has a power period, which is 3 hours every day, where you can be super productive. And like, forget about that, you know, these investment banking stories of, oh gosh, we work 120-hour weeks. Like, nobody can be productive for 120 hours a week. And so he says, look, you got 3 hours. So find those 3 hours, bunch all of your super important stuff there, and all the other hours, just like answer emails, do administrative things and everything else. And so kind of save it up and find those.
Well, Lauren, right. I think we're gonna bring this all together by the end of this conversation. Power lifting, power hours, mental health.
I know, I like
it. It's
this.
All coming
I
together.
Know. Yeah.
I like it. Yeah, yeah.
So our focus today is mental health and wellness.
Yeah.
In organizations. And I wanna start by just defining these terms because I feel like they're used a little loosely out in the world, but are these the terms you use in your own work?
Yes. And so this is a great point. So mental health, in much the same way that like physical health, if you ask someone, gosh, how are you feeling, physically healthy or not, then you can get lots of different answers. And in fact, for the same ailment, you can get different answers, right? Someone might have like a slight ankle strain or something else. I'll be like, oh, it's terrible. It hurts when I walk up the stairs. And someone else with the same ankle strain can be like, yeah, everything's fine. Right. And kind of not let you know about that. So mental health is kind of the same, right? In the sense that it's a continuum. We now are able to diagnose more of these mental health disorders. But even those disorders, they happen on a spectrum.
Right.
Right. And they have to do a lot with symptoms and symptoms reported by the individuals that have them. And so in that sense, how many of these exist and how they exist is going to be super differentiated across people.
So the range, just to establish the range of this conversation, is it everything from going back to work after dealing with the loss of a loved one to conditions with diagnostic codes?
Yes, actually, that the one that you just mentioned is going to be a roughly like the third most prevalent mental health disorder in that bucket, and that's a post-traumatic stress disorder. And so that class of disorders will include things after a traumatic life event or a series of events. When we think about some of the other big ones that you kind of have in mind, actually the largest of all the mental health disorders that are diagnosed worldwide are anxiety disorders, or classes of anxiety disorders. And the second are depression and depressive symptom disorders. And so because those three are kind of the largest by a fair margin, those are the three where there's the most research on.
Great. Right?
And so with those three in mind, I could just tell you about 10.7% of the world's population, this is by the most recent WHO numbers, had some kind of mental health disorder during their lifetime. And so that's about 800 million people.
Wow.
And anxiety disorders are going to be about 280 million out of that 800 million. So they're the largest group of those. And then in terms of US data, we have good US data as well. And so here it's going to be roughly about 1 in 5 U.S. adults has a mental health episode each year. Okay, so it's much larger.
Wow.
And roughly 31% of adults, so this is 1 in 3, have a mental health issue or disorder at some point in their life.
Right, and so do you mean experiencing one of those three categories? So a traumatic event, anxiety and depression, and then the longer tail of conditions. 1 in 3 of us will experience some part of those categories at some point in our lives.
Exactly. And those episodes, you know, like we mentioned, those episodes that can mean something very different, right? So like you could have an anxiety disorder episode that for you is only a week, let's say. And for me, it can be 6 months.
Right. So Lauren, your core academic expertise is behavioral finance.
Yes.
So how did you find yourself getting interested in mental health?
I'll tell you where it comes from. Kind of a field within behavioral finance that I really focus on is kind of firm value. And I think about kind of what adds value to firms and what takes away value from firms. And what we've been seeing kind of throughout the past 40 years is that labor has become a much larger percentage of firm value in general, right? So in the 1970 firm, it turns out, I could tell you the value of Ford. It's that plant plus that plant plus that plant. So this is many machines. And like, that's the value of Ford. And our accounting systems reflected that, right? But today, those aren't the value of firms, right? People are taking much more of that center stage. And so that really got me into this area of thinking, gosh, what makes people able to show their best values at work, right? Express that the best that they can be in the workplace.
Literally your human resources. And if your human
finally, their human resources
are struggling, then that's not great news for the business.
Yes. Yeah. That's 100%. When an employee walks into work, it turns out they're not a totally different person than when they took their last step from outside of work. So they're impacted by everything that happened before they got there. Like when we say it, it seems bananas, right? It just doesn't make any sense. And it turns out we have actually good empirical now and experimental evidence from psychology on this. It turns out people are incredibly good about understanding that about themselves and yet terrible at understanding that about others.
That tracks.
If I were to say, okay, what is Anne feeling right now? And I see the look on her face and I see kind of how she's looking down and maybe she doesn't say hi when I go by her, when I'm going to the printer. Then I think, she must be mad at me. You know, I'm 80% sure because the last 4 days she said hi, but today she didn't. And it turns out that our accuracy there is quite low because the reason that Anne didn't say hi today is that maybe she has a parent who's sick and that's on her mind. And so we have a really terrible ability doing that. And yet we think we're very good at it.
Literature shows that we are overconfident in our ability to predict what's happening inside the head of somebody else.
Inside of someone else. And so the reason this is so important is because when these issues are going on at work, you can't just rely on that ability to look and see that this is going on because we're not good at that as humans, even though we think we're good.
I'm curious, when you're working with leaders and trying to get their attention on this issue, what's the framing that works best? Like, how have you been successful in getting people to pay attention to this issue?
Yes. Look, this is the framing that really has people lean in. If you think that impaired human capital is worth the same as an environment where they can be their best, you are crazy in a research-proven way. When you can make those environments or have employees that don't have these types of issues, they create more value. So if you think, gosh, this is something that might affect employees at certain levels, but it certainly doesn't affect the top, it turns out it affects the top in huge ways. So there was a study run that looked at CEOs. And so what they found is that when CEOs pass away, when a CEO dies, it turns out that's not a great thing for a firm. So firm value goes down, profitability goes down, revenue goes down, and think about these, you know, super dynamic CEOs like a Steve Jobs or someone along these lines. And so we can kind of see how the value might go down. But it turns out what's even more value detracting for a firm is when a CEO has a loved one who passes away. Because when a CEO passes away, then a new CEO can come in that can purely focus still on being a CEO. When you have a CEO who has a close member of their family that passes away, then you have a distracted CEO. Then you have the CEO, they can't bring their full self to the job. And so it's shown empirically, right? This is statistically and economically significant. So these are big numbers. This thing's like 15% drop in ROA, 15% drop in profitability.
Wow.
And so I think this is really powerful evidence of just what it does to an organization when you have your employees that have something that's pulling them away from work, right? On that mental side.
So what gets in the way of organizations spending time and money on these issues?
Look, there are stigmas to mental health. So here's the worst thing firms can do. Okay, when firms say, oh, we don't have mental health issues in our firm because we have Mental Health Day or Mental Health Week, or I've told all the employees that they can come talk to me whenever they want and my door is always open, and so there are no issues, right? So denying that these things exist, that's crazy, because there are large embedded social stigmas to this. And I want to just list out what the largest ones are. So the first is that this mental health issue that an employee might have or be bringing up, that is just an excuse, right? They say, oh, you know, I'm really going through a tough time. I'm depressed, right? Or I have this anxiety disorder. I'm really anxious around other people. They say, ah, that's just an excuse. The second stigma that comes up is that having that kind of employee, if I'm a manager, is a burden to our business. So I say, gosh, if I have this member in my division and Anne doesn't have this kind of employee in their division, then her division is going to do better than mine. And then I'm worried that I'm not going to be promoted as a manager and it's really just costed our business. The third is that it's associated with some kind of weakness. If you mention that you have a mental health disorder, then quickly you're stigmatized, you're ostracized, really. The fourth is that there's some kind of self-fault involved. That, gosh, somehow, you know, Lauren got himself into this issue. Now he's bringing it into work. It's not our problem here at work. And yet he brings this in, all this baggage with him. And so we don't want this kind of employee. Then the fifth, and this is particular to family businesses, but 70 to 90% of world GDP is controlled either tacitly or directly by families and family businesses. So I do want to mention this, that these family views that this member of the family that might be there as their failure. They say, gosh, you know, this is some mistake that we've had, and I don't want to be reminded every day that I didn't do my work as a parent or as a brother, as a sister. And so we don't want this kind of person around because it just reminds me of how poor of a job we did. Then the sixth would be that it's unsafe. There's some safety precaution that I erroneously think comes along with this mental health disorder. And this kind of last one that's related to really all six of these is this kind of not my neighbor phenomenon. And this is one that we see happening so often at firms, which is, yeah, mental health is a really important thing. We need to address it. Just, I don't want it around my firm. I don't want it near my division. I don't want it around my employees. And so these are the kind of big seven that I see popping up most often. And in they all have like slightly different forms, but they kind of fit in one of those seven together.
So super painful list to hear. I haven't gone deep on the clinical research on this, but I've spent a lot of my career in early stage organizations, in creative organizations. And anecdotally, in my own experience, there seems to be a high correlation of people who thrive in those environments, who are incredibly innovative, and also people who experience mental health challenges. Where does that fit into your research and your case for getting this right?
And I'm so glad you mentioned this. It is one of the most, I would say, not only misunderstood, but incorrectly assessed aspects of mental health and mental health disorders. There is no relationship at all, no correlation between any measure of intelligence, IQ, or creativity, and mental health illness, which is to say, we see this happening across that spectrum. There is absolutely no relationship, which is to say they're just as likely to pop up at every point in that distribution.
Lauren, I want to just ask you, what are organizations that are getting this right doing differently?
I want to start here first. Here are the things that are going on right now and that are very sensible and logical things to do that are not working. So the first one, and this is going to be the most counterintuitive because this is a frontline treatment, and that is therapy. And it turns out when we've actually run studies on therapy, psychotherapy, the evidence is pretty middling, which is to say it doesn't work all that well or not nearly as well as people think.
I'll push back and say this therapy is a huge category with a huge spectrum of approaches, practitioners. Yes. And so I think that's a rough metric to measure. But go on.
It works incredibly well for some people, which is to say, but if you know nothing else about a person, what they've tried to do is run these large sample clinical trials. And what they find is that slightly less than half of participants show any impact, and only roughly a third show a positive aspect with no remissive symptoms after 6 months. And so look, you could say, gosh, that's still 30% more. And so I completely agree with you. And for those 30%, it may be incredibly helpful. But what that says is that it may not fit everyone.
Right.
So it might be worth trying, but it's not a panacea, right? It's not the end treatment that we're going to need. And in fact, I'll put another thing in that category that we're now starting to get more evidence of: education. So they thought, gosh, if we just educate people on what these mental health ailments are and some of the treatments for them, then that's what we need to do. And so a lot of firms run, they will have mental health education days, or where they'll bring a practitioner in to talk about it for a day and to give guidelines. And it turns out some of the RCTs that we've had on this, again, have shown some pretty modest evidence to almost nothing at all from just education events, which is what a lot of firms do. And so the point is, we need to be doing more. Okay, we need to at least offer more than just these two, because they're not solving the problem. And so these are the things that we know are helping. Things like pushing toward more inclusive language, especially in the face of aggressiveness. So things like, hey, all the employees, right, especially to coworkers, but managers to employees, we're in this together. Let's talk about the issues that we're all having together. We are a team. We're in this together. They're not kind of blaming in aggressive environments, right? And in the same way, them using more humility and language, it turns out, to allow some of these mental health disorders to kind of bubble to the top and to then be addressed, and making employees feel more comfortable at work. And that turns out to have a big impact on both worker productivity and allowing these mental health disorders to be both more expressed at work and then to be addressed.
Can you give us an example, Lauren, of like, what is a message that you have heard work?
Yeah. And so on the humility side, things like when a manager says, hey, I don't know all the answers, but let's talk about some of these issues and stressors at work, or some of the reasons that I might have seen that your productivity go down, right? I don't know why. Let's talk about this. We're in this together. Okay. This is not a you thing. This is an us thing.
And this is in a one-on-one conversation with an employee that you think might be struggling.
Yes, yes.
Lauren, I know you advise firms, not individuals, but you have immersed yourself in this world. What would you advise our listeners on how to take care of and advocate for their own mental health in organizations?
That's probably the hardest to advise. And I'll tell you why. Because this would be bad advice, so I will not give it, which is to say, hey, you should go in and just completely put everything on the table, right? Always lay your cards on the table every time, and the world will immediately accept you. Because it won't, right? It won't. I would love for that to be true as soon as possible. And in fact, I'm trying to do whatever I can, large or small, to make that more of a reality. But we're not there yet. And so what I would say is that for employees that are kind of going through this on a day-to-day level, they need to find a group that they can trust, that might be family, that might be friends, and kind of start to build a structured environment where they can kind of create bubbles around what we were just talking about, right? Where they can have inclusive language, right? Where they can have a kind of team that's in this together, where they feel like they can talk about anything. And that is one of the best things that they can do for their own mental health.
So what is the best way for me to say to my boss, hey, I'm having a hard time. I think I might be experiencing symptoms of depression. I don't feel like myself. I'm not showing up for work in the way I want to. It's probably the point where this needs to be discussed somehow. What's my opening line?
So I think this is a great question. I haven't thought about it before, but here's so on my toes, this is what I do. I'd say, you know, look, roughly 1 in 3 Americans experience some kind of mental health disorder. And I think I'm experiencing one right now. I'm not sure how long it's going to last or how severe it's going to get, but I do know this, the earlier that we can address it, the better it's going to be. I'd love for you to be a partner in that. If not, that's completely fine. But I wanted to let you know, I wanted to be transparent, because transparency is the best way to get through this. So that's what I would say, because it turns out from the evidence and judgment decision-making, one of the best ways, most powerful ways to convince people is through numbers. So if you can come in and say, gosh, a third of all Americans go through this, then your boss is like saying, wow, a third of Americans, I didn't know that. This really is a big problem. And so it frames it in a big way.
Your toes are pretty good.
Yeah.
When you just said you're going to do that on your toes.
Beautiful.
Pretty good. Standing ovation to the toes.
What you win for offering that insight is another role play.
Another role play. That's just what I wanted.
So, Lauren, I'm concerned that my employee, Frances, may be experiencing symptoms of depression. She has not approached me to make this discussable, but it's affecting her work. It's affecting the culture of the office. It's affecting people's willingness to...
This is striking close to home, Lauren.
Rely on her. No, you're doing fine, baby. How would you advise me to approach that conversation and begin it?
Yes. And these are incredibly hard conversations to have, right? And each one of those is going to have a personal component that is going to have to kind of weigh on this in a big way. But this is what I would do. One of the ways to have people open up the quickest is to have some kind of shared experience with them. So this has to do with like death of, let's say, a close loved one. And so if you have had any episode yourself, you can say, gosh, last year, you know, when my husband died, my wife died, it was tough for me. And it wasn't just tough when it happened, but afterwards. And I really got to a place that it was hard for me to work. And, you know, for a while, I was really embarrassed about it. But now I realize it should. It's part of who I am. I bring my whole self to work every day, and I'm not embarrassed about that. And I just want you to know that, because I want this to be the kind of office where we can talk about these things. And I want you to know, if you ever want to bring that, it's totally fine. You don't need to say anything now, or if there's nothing going on, totally fine. But I want you to know, look, this is something that is important to me, that we be the kind of office that does this. Even if we haven't been in the past, then I want to start now.
I love it. Lauren, I'd love to know where the frontier of this research is going, and then I'd love to know what you hope listeners take away from this conversation.
Absolutely. Electrical brain stimulation, because we're now finding what parts of the brain kind of light up when depressive episodes happen or when anxiety episodes happen. And so this kind of low-wave electrical brain stimulation has been shown to be somewhat promising. And the same thing with targeting certain gene clusters, because we've seen gene clusters kind of show up in different parts of the brain. And so targeting those parts of the brain with other types of treatments as well. And so those types of things, even though they're at the frontier, they've been showing quite a bit of promise. And so just staying open to kind of new, even if they seem like wacky ideas, that might be the path forward.
I needed to hear them from you first, Lauren, for me to not think they were wacky. And I bet our listeners, I bet that's going to be true for listeners as well.
Well, then I'm happy. I'm happy to unwackyify them for the listeners. Okay. And so here is the single and most research-proven solution from a macro perspective that's going to solve this problem. And that is time and exposure. And so I want to thank both of you, because your podcast alone is building exactly that foundation we need, right? Getting it more out there. The more people hear about this, the more they see it, the more it's part of their everyday lives, that has been shown to knock down barriers, like a barrier to mental health issues. And so I think it's going to take time, it's going to take exposure, but we're going to get there.
And then if I'm listening to this and I'm persuaded, I want my firm to be a place where everyone can thrive, where do I even start on this issue?
The first thing and the most important thing, especially within this fast changing space, is to find a source of information, and I'll give you a couple of them, and stay tuned. And they are the National Alliance on Mental Illness and the World Health Organization. They are big in this space, and I trust them both.
Amazing. Lauren, thank you so much for spending time with us and on such an important topic. I know we just scratched the surface, and so I hope you'll come back and let us know how it's going on the frontier.
I want to thank you both so much for both having me on and elevating this on your platform, because you really are an important part of the solution. So thank you both so much.
Yeah. Support for the show comes from Brooks Running. I'm so excited because I have been a runner, gosh, my entire adult life. And for as long as I can remember, I have run with Brooks running shoes. Now I'm running with a pair of Ghost 16s from Brooks. Incredibly lightweight shoes that have really soft cushioning. It feels just right when I'm hitting my running trail that's just out behind my house. You now can take your daily run in the better than ever Ghost 16. You can visit brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Oh, I have so many thoughts and emotions after having that conversation. I'm trying to sort through them. Frances, what do you hope listeners take away from this conversation?
I hope listeners take away that mental health is another pebble in the obstacles to performance. It needn't be a boulder. It's a pebble. And if we cannot paint it any particularly shameful color, that would be great. So what I hope people take is that it's manageable for organizations. I mean, I am so compelled by the numbers. I had no idea.
Yeah. Like the probability that your colleagues and employees are going to confront a mental health issue is higher than the probability that they'll have a physical illness. I love the bereavement example, because the probability that we're going to experience in some version of that during our working life is quite high. And there is no shame, or far less shame, attached with the struggles we have to return to work and to show up in the way that we aspire to after a traumatic event like the loss of a loved one. And it feels like a way into this discussion because of the lack of stigma.
Yeah, I'm always looking for the right way in, and I love that this is a safe and universal way in.
Yeah, and I know there's a movement to blow up this idea of human resources and your human resources department, because it sounds so Orwellian and cold. Well,
he just brought the most humanity to human resources I've heard in a long time.
But there is some power in bringing that lens to it, because it is the resources that we have an incentive to really protect inside organizations. So I was provoked in the best sense.
Thank you for listening, everyone. We want to hear from you. If you want to figure out a workplace problem together, send us a message, email us at fixable@ted.com, or call us at 234-FIXABLE. That's 234-349-2253. And you can now text us there, too.
Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Anne Morris.
And me, Frances Fry.
Our team includes Isabel Carter, Constanza Gallardo, Lydia Jean Cott, Grace Rubenstein, Sarah Nix, Michelle Quint, Corey Hagem, Alejandra Salazar, Ban Ban Chang, and Roxanne Highlash. This episode was mixed by Louis at Storyyard.
If you're enjoying the show, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And tell a friend to check us out.
And one more thing. If you can, please take a second to leave us a review. It really helps us make a great show.
And it totally helps the search algorithm.
You're growing a business, and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate, no coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.